Those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors.
Problems, problems, problems all day long. Will my problems work out right or wrong? My baby don't like anything I do. My teacher seems to feel the same way too.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to KFAR Radio. We are at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at KFARradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. If you want to call into today's show, we're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. Today's show is date specific. It is the last Wednesday of the month, which means...
It's History Day with Joni Skilbred and David Pruse.
And since it's March, what are we doing today?
Oh, today's a special day. It's an annual thing every year. We're going to make our Ice Classic ticket picks for charity, and we each do a ticket, and we pick our charity. So if my ticket wins, the Alaska Mining Hall of Fame wins, and if you win...
The Monroe Foundation.
The Monroe Foundation. So cross your fingers. When we picked this, though, we both picked the same day.
I know. My day is May 8th at 3:19 p.m., and yours is May 8th.
At 6:36 p.m.
So she offered me the over-under, and I chose the date, May 8th at noon. So I chose the over, since we're both on the over side of May 8th. What happens to the loser?
Well, the loser wins. It's a win-win. It is.
So what does the loser do?
If the ice at Nenana, the Ice Classic, if the ice goes out after 12 p.m. on May 8th, then loser has to
Which would be you.
Oh, you're really thinking big, aren't you?
I'm
loser has to make dinner for the winner.
Lunch.
And bring it here.
And we have it.
We have it on our May show.
Yeah.
Last Wednesday in May. Yes.
I'm just projecting positive vibes.
I think that we're 2-2 on this annual bet.
We are. Yeah.
And we've had some pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, we don't hold back.
Yeah. Yeah. We only got sloshed the first time.
You got sloshed. I did
not. You had some too.
Oh, don't try and drag me into your cranial aspects. You're the one who kept making the toasts. And what was the first lunch or first meal?
I recreated the very first banquet in the Tanana Valley, which was held in like the spring of 1904.
Which it was 1903.
1903.
When City of Fairbanks became the City of Fairbanks.
Yeah.
So why did you choose the Mining Museum?
Because I haven't chose it before in our annual, Ice Classic guests.
It's a great choice.
Yes. And, you know, they're one of our museums around town. You know, I've done the Tanana Valley Railroad Museum and the Fairbanks Pioneer Museum. And I do a lot of work at the Alaska Mining Hall of Fame Museum. And so I thought, well, this year maybe I'll pick them.
You know, I did the Monroe Foundation. I was thinking about it, and I graduated from Monroe, and the Monroe Foundation is the entity that goes out and raises all the money to keep the school going.
Mm-hmm.
And then yesterday when
that
I saw...
That is quite an endeavor.
Yeah, and yesterday when I saw that the Fairbanks North Star Borough School Board approved a $232 million budget for 12,500 people at $18,500 per student, I said... I just thought to myself, I'm investing in quality education if this thing wins, because they give quality education more bang for the buck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's our show on today?
Our show is about early day flood control in Fairbanks.
Yeah. And right now they're having a fight over A67 Alaska Land Pioneer Park, and it got nailed by the flood in 67.
It did. So flood control and, well, control of water in the Chena River goes
always been an issue
all the way back to the very day the Lavelle Young brought Captain Barnett
and Isabel
up and dumped them out on the site we're sitting on today. And they had trouble getting up the Chena. They got a little further up than where we are today, and the Lavelle Young couldn't go any further. And, you know, for those that don't know about these steam-powered river boats in the river, going upriver was much easier than going downriver.
Mm-hmm.
Because downriver, the current's pushing you, and that current will push you hard onto a bar. If you're going upriver, you can back off of the bar.
Yeah.
Sandbar. But anyway, so he went up just a little further, and the agreement was between Captain Adams of the Lavelle Young and Barnett, E.T. Barnett, was Captain Adams said, I will take you up as far as we can go, but that's it.
And then you're on the side. You're
and
dumped
then you're
off.
Out.
Yep, you're out.
And so they debated, and Barnett talked him into coming down a little bit further downstream because this was a better spot to get kicked out.
So, yeah, tell that to Isabel with the famous portrait of her crying on the bank.
Yes.
What the heck did I get into here?
Yeah, as the riverboat pulled away and they were marooned for the winter, Isabel was sitting on a crate crying. You know, that was her last hope of civilization. But she ended up, you know, it was a worthy gamble. They ended up filthy rich, so.
There you go.
But Fairbanks was here, but before Fairbanks was here, there was a trading post down at the mouth of the Chena River where the Chena meets the Tanana, but it was on an island right across the river.
On the south side.
Yes. There's a big island there. And that trading post
Wasn't that Whiskey Island?
It might be. It was called Hendricks and Belt's Trading Post, and it predates Barnett arriving.
I got some history for you. What's the name of the railroad at Alaska Land?
The Whiskey Creek.
Whiskey Island.
Whiskey Island and Crooked Creek.
Who named that?
Your father.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So
how's that for a little bit of history on a Wednesday?
Yeah. So over there on Whiskey Island was Hendricks and Belt's trading post, and also on the east bank, roughly, was the native encampment. I don't know that it was a village then. Maybe it was, but the natives had a place there where the Chena and Tanana met. And they, you know, they were there. And the town of Chena ended up on the west bank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, roughly where the Chena Wayside boat ramp is off of Chena Pump Road today.
Yep.
There was a whole town that grew up there. And that town and Fairbanks in the very early days were competing with each other for permanence. And so it looked like for a while there that Chena was going to win out. Chena had a few advantages over Fairbanks. Chena had a deep water port because it was on the Tanana River right before it comes into the Chena River. The town of Chena had a better access to the mines via the Goldstream Valley, where Fairbanks, you have to go up and over Cleary Summit to get there, and you also have to go over the hill there on the Stees.
Gilmore and...
Mm-hmm, yeah. So there was a real battle. Well, the very first stampeder to arrive in Fairbanks was Gus Conrad on Christmas Day, 1902. Now, remember, in July of 1902 is when Felix Pedro made his discovery. And August Conrad he mushed in with Bill Salmon from Rampart, and they were the very first official stampeders to arrive. They looked over Fairbanks, and they didn't like it, and they went back to Chena, and they bought a lot, and they built a place there.
Yeah.
So they called them Chinites. And he says that by May 1st of 1903, Chinatown, this is out of Gus Conrad's diary, he says, by May 1st, 1903, Chinatown is getting to look like a real town. The ice went out on May 7th, and on May 15th, a larger steamer, the Seattle No. 3, with Captain Gray at the helm, and Howard Turner on board. And Howard Turner was an auditor for the NC Company. And they wanted to establish a post here because they'd heard about this strike. Now, this is in May of 1903. Howard Turner, Turner Street.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, is named after him. Well, so they had trouble crossing the bar, the sandbar, in front of the town of Chena, because the water was really low. And the Chena people Gus Conrad writes, the Chena people made a very serious mistake by yelling at Captain Gray, for if they had kept quiet, Gray would have landed at Chena and thus made the headquarters and camp for the NC Company. Instead, he pulled out his walking beams, which are an aid that they have to get themselves off of a sandbar, and he got off the bar, requiring one full day, and he had a difficult time reaching Fairbanks, but he cut a deal subsequently with Captain Barnett, and mm-hmm. the NC Company was here in Fairbanks. Kind of sealed the fate of Chena.
Fairbanks, with that sealing the fate of Chena, we're going to take a commercial break. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Total Toyo's all about Toyo stoves, but that's not all they are. They also know and service gas stoves, wood stoves, and pellet stoves. If you ask me, what is an EPA certification and how does it affect my choice of wood stoves? Or why would the metal on the inside of my pellet stove begin to flake? I can't answer those questions, but Total Toyo would know. So if you have heating questions for your home, you need to ask Total Toyo. If you're looking to buy, need your stove serviced, or have questions about Toyo stoves, gas stoves, wood stoves, or pellet stoves, you need Total Toyo.
How can you grow your business from idea to industry leader? With smart business buying tools and technology from Amazon Business. From fast free shipping to in-depth buying insights and automated purchase approvals, we deliver everything you need. Go to AmazonBusiness.com for support.
Even if you've given up on your New Year's resolutions, one health habit that's easy to keep is Active Liver from New Nordic. Active Liver protects your liver so you can enjoy life to the fullest. Online at Amazon, in stores at CVS, Walgreens, and now GNC.
Honey, that flu keeping you up? Did you take NyQuil Intense Flu?
Nah, I got this. Okay, I don't got this.
Yeah, you need NyQuil Intense Flu.
Undo your flu with NyQuil Intense Flu. NyQuil Intense Flu provides powerful relief of your flu symptoms so you can sleep.
You do got this.
NyQuil Intense Flu. The nighttime sniffling, aching, fever, best sleep with the flu, medicine. Use as directed, keep out of reach of children.
Give it to me straight, Doc. I can handle it. Are you going to have to remove the whole thing?
Actually, I'll have your broken window fixed in no time. At Glass Doctor, we can handle it all, even custom glass.
Oh, thanks, Doc. You're a real lifesaver.
The doctor is in. Glass Doctor is on call for fast, full-service residential glass repair, replacement, and installation. Visit glassdoctor.com to make an appointment.
Call the Glass Doctor. We fix your panes. Oh, yeah.
A neighborly company.
KFAR Weather.
Bright sunshine today with daytime highs approaching 18. Northeasterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Clear skies again tonight. Lows dip down to about 15 below. Bright sunshine expected tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 23. Partly cloudy and dry Friday and Saturday with highs in the mid-20s. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I've got Joni Skillbred in the studio here with me. She's already thinking that she's going to lose the bet to me. Or maybe she's just smirking at me and thinking I'm a dumb person.
You told me that something with wings would taste good.
An endangered species, yes.
Yes, a Polaris pigeon. A Polaris pigeon.
No fish. Polaris.
Squab.
Yeah. You're an evil woman. My favorite ELO song.
So when we went to the break, you know, the Chinaites screwed up and made fools of themselves, and Howard Turner, who was representing the NC company, said, well, we ain't going to stop there. So
yeah.
What did
the Chinaites say? What was the issue again?
Well, they taunted the boat when it got stuck on the sandbar out in front of China.
Yeah.
And so the captain just went, you know, well.
Not the middle finger, but the business finger.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So they went up, and it wasn't easy. And they got up to Fairbanks, and so Fairbanks NC Company established a post here.
Yeah.
And that was
an NC Machinery boat.
Yes.
Exactly.
And then Judge Wickersham also decided to locate the judicial seat here.
Yeah.
Chino was going to go away, but Chino wasn't going to go down without a fight. So there was this intense, intense rivalry between these two towns in the summer of 1903, 1904, and into 1905, but especially in 1904. The problem that Fairbanks had was you couldn't get these river boats up to Fairbanks. It was a big problem. The Chena River was not big enough. So?
Flood control, water relocation.
Water, yes, we need more water. And what water is close by?
The Tanana
River. And so they sent people out, and they examined the situation, and a plan was hatched, and they passed around the hat around town, and they got everybody in Fairbanks to subscribe. They raised, I think it was $12,000. And they went up to the area where the Moose Creek Bluff is, and you know that slough that runs
where all the high school students spray paint their year.
Yes.
I never did that.
Well, anyway, I have a comment about that later on in the show. But anyway, so there's a slough that runs along Badger Road. And, you know, people call it the Badger Slough. It's actually the Chena Slough.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read in these old newspaper accounts, Chena Slough, they call the Chena River Chena Slough. They call that slough the Chena Slough. But anyway, that runs all the way through. It goes around North Pole, and it goes all the way to Moose Creek Bluff.
Mm-hmm.
It did.
Yeah, back then.
Back then. And they diverted part of the pile driver slough, which used to be bigger than what it is now. And they...
which is also known as Persinger Slough.
No, the pile driver slough is down towards Eielson,
and
it runs up and it to Moose Creek Bluff.
Yeah.
And then right after Moose Creek Bluff, it dumps into the Tanana. So it's like maximum size.
Okay.
And they saw that as the spot to get water diverted from the Tanana via the pile driver slough into...
So they're looking at moving water north against
the
grain.
They're going to mix waters.
Yeah,
yes.
Against the grain, we'll call it.
Well, they were very close to one another.
Yeah.
So they built, they started work, and they were building a jetty, and they were building this jetty by driving log pilings down into the silt and the mud, and they were... controlling the where the pile driver went so that it would divert into this slough. Well, the people of China found out about this, and they said, oh, hell no. We are not going to do that. We're not going to allow this. And they complained to the Secretary of War, because everything was federal in those days. The Secretary of War was William Howard Taft.
Mm-hmm.
He later became president. And they bitterly complained to him, and they said, they're interfering with the navigation of the river, and that's not allowed. And so, you know, it was decided in Washington that we needed to do a study. They looked over stuff. They got stuff submitted from a couple guys that had an engineering background here in Fairbanks, sent the plans because they've got to counteract what China's doing. Anyway, it gets reviewed by Taft, who was the Secretary of War, and they were concerned. They said, you will cease and desist on this because you are endangering everybody. Because now you've set up a situation where the Tanana can completely divert into the China. And that caused a moment of panic. But they did manage to get the pile driver to put more water into the China. So when you look at pictures of Fairbanks in the early days, the river's much bigger and it's muddy.
Yeah.
And that's why. And so Fairbanks benefited, you know, it's like, well, it's already done. Ironically, a few months later, there was low water in the Tanana, and the Chinites, this was affecting their harbor, and boats couldn't get up above there. And so they wanted to do the same thing. They wanted to divert one of the Tanana channels to benefit their town. And, you know, the Secretary of War is
said,
like,
no.
What is it with you people?
Now, why was it the Secretary of War?
Because everything was federal here.
Military district.
Yes, we were.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. We did not have a territorial legislature.
Military district.
We were under military rule. Absolutely. So Fairbanks, you know, they got that benefit of that water, and that helped them to win out over China. China evaporated pretty much after that. They did have the terminus of the Tanana Mines Railway, which later became the Tanana Valley Railroad. They were still used. The bigger boats would dock there, but it was Fairbanks. And that worked out to be good. In 1905, there was a major flood 1 year later that really made a mess of things. And Fairbanks, a lot of people were homeless in Fairbanks and in China. It was a devastating flood. There weren't very many places that around here.
Was it a spring flood or a fall flood?
It was a summer.
Ooh.
Yeah. It was right in the middle of summer, you know. I would say maybe on par with what happened in 1967.
August, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, and, you know, so flooding here is nothing new, but that really got the attention of people. And, oh, my gosh, and we had spring flooding during breakup as well.
Mm-hmm.
It would wash out all the bridges. So, you know, Fairbanks, while being a river city, was a flood city. And because we diverted part of the Tanana into the China, it made that flooding even worse. Because you've got an even higher volume of water coming through.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was pretty rough. And they lived in fear for many years of, would the Tanana divert totally into the China? Because if it did, it would take Fairbanks away. Fairbanks would wash away, and so would China.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a look at some bumper music here. Losing My Religion. Ooh. It's not a... We are in Lent.
Isn't that R.E.M.?
Yes.
Yeah.
We are in Lent. What the heck? Then we're going to go to some Fox News, some state news, some commercials, and some weather. And the weather's getting better.
Yes, it is.
We'll be back.
Thank you.
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm John Sussier. A jury in Los Angeles has found both Meta and YouTube are liable in a first-of-its-kind lawsuit aiming to hold social media platforms responsible for harm to children. They've awarded the plaintiff $3 million in damages, this after more than 40 hours of deliberation. The jury decided that each company's negligence was a substantial factor in causing harm to the plaintiff, a now 20-year-old woman who says her use of social media as a child addicted her to the technology and exacerbated her mental health struggles. The company's not off the hook yet for just $3 million. The jury decided they acted with malice, so there will be punitive damages. A Meta spokesperson in a statement says, "We respectfully disagree with the verdict in evaluating our legal options." The war with Iran continues. House Speaker Mike Johnson wants it over.
We're wrapping up Operation Epic Fury. That's what I think. I think it will be done in short order, and that'll be right on schedule.
America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The Fairbanks Daily News Minor reports the Alaska Department of Natural Resources will host an open house public meeting regarding the opening of parts of the Dalton Highway Corridor from 6 till 7:30 p.m. tonight at the Nolwien Library. The open house is being billed as the first in a series intended to gather information related to public access on state-selected lands that were previously withdrawn under Public Land Order 5150, DNR stated in its announcement. The Department of the Interior formally repealed parts of two public land orders in February as part of the Trump administration's goal of opening Alaska to more resource development. According to DNR, that means up to 2.1 million acres may be conveyed to the state of Alaska as part of the state's remaining land entitlement under the Alaska statehood. The lands are located between the Yukon River and the North Slope Borough. The Interior Department's decision to revoke the public lands orders garnered support from Alaska's congressional delegation, Governor Mike Dunleavy, and the resource development industry.
Online at KFAR660.com.
After a record-breaking cold winter, summer is going to hit different this year. So get ready to ride with a little help from Alaska Fun Center. Check out the latest machines from Yamaha, Kawasaki, and CF Moto. From street bikes and cruisers to dirt bikes and a full lineup of ATVs and side-by-sides built for Alaskan adventures. Whether you're hitting the road, the trail, or way off the grid, all the fun starts at Alaska Fun Center on College Road.
Across Alaska's rivers, runways, trap lines, and trails, there are stories that deserve to be heard. Those stories live on Alaska Tracks. Hosted by wildlife biologist and lifelong outdoorsman Randy Zarnke, Alaska Tracks takes you inside the lives of the people who know this land best. Elders, hunters, bush pilots, and trappers who carry Alaska's traditions forward. Built on an oral history project by the Alaska Trappers Association, each episode blends conversation, storytelling, and first-hand experience, connecting generations, bush and city, past and present. This isn't just a show. It's a living archive and a reminder of what it means to live in the last frontier. Alaska Tracks is proudly presented by KFAR Radio and sponsored by Rod's Saw Shop, Ginger Orem with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding Extreme North Trailers, and Frontier Outfitters. Alaska Tracks, Saturday at 1:30 p.m., only on KFAR Radio. Stories of the North, told by the people who live them.
Is your car feeling more tired than Monday morning without coffee? It might be time for an oil change. Don't let your car hit snooze on maintenance. Bring it to us, where we'll give it the wake-up call it deserves. Our oil changes start as low as $49, and that's for the good stuff. We're talking synthetic. And every oil change comes with a free safety inspection, plus we can check your filters and top off your fluids while we're at it. At a price that will leave you with plenty of pizza money, that's Glacier Garage at the end of South Cushman, just behind GCR Tire. Open 7 to 5, Monday through Friday. Online at glaciergarage.com.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. Here with Joni Skillbred. Now, if I win, it's not going to involve whiskey like you brought in. It will involve wine, maybe some port.
Oh.
So I've got to, if I lose...
I brought you wine last year. I brought you Snoop Dogg, and you liked it.
I did. So I'm already thinking in my mind, if I do not win this, not that I'm going to lose, if I do not win, it has to be something Italian.
Of course.
I've got to do something Italian.
You're Italian.
Yes. Italian, Irish, and German.
You know what I am. I'm half Norwegian.
Yeah.
And lutefisk is like the signature dish.
Your food palate really sucks.
It's all white.
Now with that, I like the way we're looking at our donations. You're mining. Mm-hmm. I'm education. Yes. And that so reminds me of the Newsminer in Sunday's paper. When they showed that, when they had that story of Ashley Carrick's concerned citizen meeting about the Esther mining.
The big picture on the front page of the paper.
Yeah, and the Newsminer said there were dozens of people, and there's only, in the whole place, you can only see like three people.
And lots of empty chairs.
Yeah, and there in the front is the head miner, Roger Burgraff.
Yeah. He was pro-mining for sure.
Yeah, and I was just laughing about that, and I go, Ashley, what oversight do you have on this? Because you don't. Mm-hmm. It's just an election year for you.
Yep.
And you're trying to be important, and you're trying to get your constituency, Esther, all mixed up. Now, what is the population of Esther now versus the 1970s when there were a lot of active mines out there? It's bigger.
Yeah. In fact, it's probably
smaller.
Yeah.
So be honest about it. Mm-hmm. Be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, and you know, it's always been a mining area.
Mm-hmm.
It was called a mining area.
You know, yeah.
I don't think there's ever been a time when there was no active mining.
Why is there a pump house?
Well, are you going to say that
because they pumped water from the pump house over into the Esther area, that area?
Well,
they pumped it over the hill.
Those mining claims have been held by people, and mining claim owners have rights.
Yeah.
And you can't take their rights away just so you can have your house that you bought in a mining district.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's mining.
Yeah.
Yes. But anyway.
Fairbanks, yes. I had to go down that rant.
So we talked about they diverted the Tanana into they found a way to divert part of it into the Chena via the pile driver slough.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you've got this fear that the Tanana is going to one day fully divert into that water route and take out Fairbanks and Chena.
Yeah.
And they had a couple of floods. Over the years, they had quite a few floods, some of them bigger than others. But there were two types of flooding. There was a summer flood that came from rains, and then there were breakup floods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have the flood control project that we all know today. When you drive between Eielson and North Pole, mm-hmm. you can see the spillway when you go over those two bridges. But we're not immune from the other kind of flooding, which is ice jam flooding. So at breakup, if an ice jam forms, the water will back up behind it. And Fairbanks, in numerous years past, many, many times, has had ice jam flooding. And there were a couple times in the 40s where they sent military aircraft up and they would bomb ice jams if it was threatening here or another river community.
I know. They bombed ice jams.
They won't do that today, but
those darn grayling.
I thought that was an awesome solution.
Yeah.
You know?
Those darn burbot.
Every kid in town wanted to see it.
Yeah.
You know?
Damn snow machiners.
But they dynamited some of the ice jams, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm sure that if that happened today, they would have to look at using explosives to clear the ice before major damage would happen in Fairbanks. So anybody living on this riverbank property that they pay a ridiculous amount of money for needs to understand that they are not immune from flooding.
No.
There's no guarantee because of breakup.
Yeah, because there's now a Chena flood control project.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the first flood control was after they got the river diverted, the Tanana diverted into the Chena, found a way to do it. Well, now you've got a lot more water coming down, and you've got erosion happening along the riverbank, along First Avenue in mm-hmm. Fairbanks. So they had to drive pilings, and they put in trash behind the pilings because they didn't have gravel.
You know, I always, next time you're taking a trip down the Chena River,
mm-hmm.
and you get to Riverview and start going around the bends. And what you're going to see on the sides of the hills are
cars
that they're crushed cars used as, you know,
riprap.
Riprap, yeah.
For erosion control.
Yeah.
Well, so they put these pilings, they put trash in behind the pilings. And trash, it wasn't like plastic bags. They didn't have those. It's wood chips.
Tin cans,
bits of this, bits of that. But it was all pretty much compostable kind of trash. Yeah. It'll degrade. And then they put dirt over the top of it. And so when you drive down First Avenue today, a lot of what you're driving on is our old trash. But they did that, and they built a seawall, and that also improved wharfing for riverboats, you know, docking facilities and all of that. So that was the very first flood control to stop erosion of the riverbank. And they had to revamp that over the years. But then flood control, like what we think of flood control, In the the riverboats quit coming after the Alaska Railroad. And so we didn't need that water coming into the Chena anymore. And people started really worrying about, okay, we don't need that water. That water is actually a threat to our growing city. It's causing higher insurance rates. It's causing, you know, you don't want to build in certain places. If we eliminate that threat completely of water from the Tanana coming into the Chena, then, you know, we're enhancing the growth of our community. And so they started an effort in the late 20s and in all through the 30s of doing flood control. And that was about a 10-year process. And they had to have hearings, and they had to, the Chamber of Commerce and the City Council, they had to send letters to Washington, because we were still a territory, and to the territorial legislature, and get everybody on board that this is a real need in Fairbanks. Fortunately, the Great Depression had happened, and FDR had the New Deal, and he was spending money like a drunken sailor. And he rubber stamped it, and eventually we got the approval for the money. They had sent a few Army Corps of Engineer personnel up, and they had mapped it. They made the plans, everything else. And so by the early 1940s, I think it might have even been 1940, they had completed the first flood control project, and they built a dike over by the Moose Creek Bluff. They disconnected the pile driver slough from
They disconnected the one going north.
Yes.
Now they're looking at one coming south.
And they built that dike, is still there today.
Yeah.
You can see it.
What's the name of the road?
Dyke
Road.
Oh, that's in North Pole.
Yeah.
That's over in a subdivision over by Moose Creek Bluff.
Yeah.
And I always wondered why it was named that, and now I know. And so they built, and you can still see the dike today if you look at it with Google Earth, and that was in the 40s. But the problem was is that the Tanana River goes on to run up alongside all of South Fairbanks. And they realized later on that actually that is not enough. That stops the immediate threat. But after the 1967 flood, you know, it was clearly seen that, no, they needed something more. The lobbying to get something more actually started in 1958. But nobody was really, you know, they were trying to get some movement generated in all the powers that be to get something done, knowing that it takes a long time, the planning and everything else, it takes a long time and to get the money. So do we need to break?
Yes, we do.
Okay, we'll come back.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. I have in the studio with me Joni Skillbred, and we'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
It's time to schedule your boiler cleaning and service with Cowles Heating. With decades of experience working on heating systems across the interior, Cowles Heating knows what it takes to keep Fairbanks warm. Book your appointment now and take advantage of their generous spring discount, a special they've offered for 11 years. Your heating system worked hard this summer. Now give it the clean and tune it deserves. Call 479-HEAT to schedule today. Cowles Heating, keeping Fairbanks warm for over 20 years.
Spring is in the air. Somewhere. Snow what I mean? Hey, Fairbanks, Los Angeles, Fairbanks Nissan. We're starting our spring cleaning early. So this month, I've got some easy deals you should know about. This month, you can buy three tires and you can get the fourth for a dollar. So plan ahead and get your tires now. Hold on to your ski wax. We're down to our last few 2025 Nissans, and these are going to go fast. We have a ton of options. Yes, even all-wheel drives for under $30,000. We have two Nissan Versas, stock number 25107 and 108. You can buy for just $22,999. How about this, an all-wheel drive Altima, stock number 25062, for just $29,999. We're cleaning house. On top of all that, NEMAC has 0% offers on Pathfinders, Muranos, and Rogues. And J.D. Power says the 25 Nissans are the number one non-luxury brand for initial quality. Oh, and if it's time to sell your old ride, we're in car buying mode. Come see Shorty, our used car manager. He's looking to buy the best spring rides today. Sell your car, get a fantastic deal on your next ride, or get your tires during our best sale of the year. See all the spring deals at FairbanksNissan.com. That's FairbanksNissan.com.
0% requires bank approval. Sale prices valid until the end of the month while supplies last. See dealer for details.
It's time again for the Alaska Health Fairs, a nonprofit providing health fairs statewide since 1980. These health fairs offer free education, screenings, and the most affordable comprehensive blood tests and caring customer service in Alaska. Next health fair is March 28th, 8:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the Solcha Community Health Fair at the Solcha Volunteer Fire Department off the Richardson Highway. For more information on the upcoming Alaska Health Fairs, go online to alaskahealthfair.org.
KFAR weather.
Bright sunshine expected today with daytime highs approaching 18. Northeast winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Clear skies tonight. Lows dip down to about 15 below. Daytime highs approaching 23. Tomorrow, ample sunshine expected. That's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM, 660 AM,
and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Joni Skillbred in the studio here with me. We're doing well.
We are.
I'm still going to...
We're needy.
If I don't win, I'm coming in second in our...
Oh, there's no losers.
No, you're right.
There's no losers.
There's just worker bees and people not having to...
But we're knee-deep in flood control.
I know. Now,
did you get it, knee-deep?
You know... It gets interesting because, you know, they started sending the water south, and then you have the area near the mouth of the Chena that would raise, and the people there are starting to get flooded. So what begets one does not beget another.
No. No, it doesn't. There's quite a bit of river distance between the Moose Creek area and where the town of Chena was.
Yeah.
But they completed that first flood control dike in 1941.
Yeah.
And if you go to the Moose Creek Bluff, as you're heading south on the Richardson Highway, right as you get to the bluff, you will see that there's a turnoff right there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can drive on that dike today, that 1940s flood control dike. It is still in place.
Mm-hmm.
So, but by 1958, they realized we didn't really fix the problem. They started working on trying to get planning for a better, more extensive flood control. They realized that they needed more. You know, insurance companies get more and more sophisticated, yada, yada, yada. Anyway... They didn't get a lot of headway with it until the 1967 flood. Mm-hmm. And Richard Wien was doing helicopter flights during that flood. And he said to me that the whole Tanana Valley was flooded in that flood. He said it was just shocking. And this really made people very fearful because if it ever happened again, the Tanana could still divert fully into the China. So that got the wheels, nothing like a catastrophe, to get everybody on board. And so they did. They got them on board, and they secured the funding and all the support. It takes community money and support. It takes state money and support. It takes federal money and support. And so then they went on to build in the 70s the flood control project that we have today with the levee that runs all the way from the Moose Creek Bluff all the way down to the end of the international airport.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that protects the entire city. It protects the whole South Fairbanks area. It protects
when they open up those floodgates, excuse me, when they drop the gate, that's invariably going to flood the bottom of the areas.
Well, you see that spillway. That's what those bridges are for, and that's the diversion. So it will divert the excess water from the China into the Tanana, which is the opposite of what we did before.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I find it really interesting that to make Fairbanks viable, they had to divert part of the Tanana into the China, which had a terrible consequence, a maybe that could happen, and that was catastrophic flooding. But it was worth the risk.
Yeah.
We're still here. We didn't wash away. And obviously we're not going to wash away because of the investment that we made in making a better flood control. So, you know, it's a very interesting thing. The other thing I wanted to say is you were talking about the kids who do graffiti on the bluff there.
Yes.
When they started this project, and, you know, they were working on the 1940s flood control project, and they were blasting away the face of the bluff. So they took a lot of material. That bluff used to stick out a lot further.
Yeah.
And they took that material out to make that dike. Well, what was on the bluff was a whole bunch of very, very old not petroglyphs, they're rock paintings. And they were done by indigenous peoples. And they were very old. And they were discovered, and they were all over the rock face of that bluff. So they called somebody, they halted construction, they called somebody from the university. He came out and he took pictures. They gave him like a week, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was even 3 days. Very small amount of time, and he had to take all the pictures he could take, make all the drawings he could make. He grabbed a couple pieces of rock and took with him, and then they blasted it away, and all of that is in that old dike. All that history, which is really sad.
Yeah.
You know, that happened. But it makes me smile when I think about, well, they thought that it was a good place to put messages.
Yeah. it continues to this day. Yeah.
We call it, oh, look at that graffiti. And I have to wonder if back in the day, some of the indigenous peoples that would go by in a boat would say, oh, look what those kids did up there on that rock.
It's a prominent position to establish your lineage.
Yes. Well, I have to wonder, though, young people are the ones that do that. And did the older people, those darn teenagers,
15,000 years ago?
They should have been out hunting, and instead they're up there painting on the rocks. You know? I don't know.
You sound like a grandmother.
but it makes me smile when I see it, because people are people. Yeah. I don't care if it's...
The new generation is just like the older generation.
10,000 years ago or today, you know. There's rocks. Well, we need to put something on that.
And I don't agree with what they put up there. They should have done this.
Well, they, you know, and so I always, it just makes me smile when I go by and see that, because I know that for thousands and thousands of years, people have been putting stuff on those rocks.
True.
Yes, it's quite a tradition. Yes.
Well, we got a few minutes left. You know, yeah. I so look forward to, not just to the informational aspect, the bantering me and you do. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun, and so appreciate you. You're the OG of the, you know, the permanent guest spots.
Oh, well,
the OG, the original.
Yeah, so, I guess I was the first one to come on and do history with you.
Yeah, the Wednesdays are very popular day.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I recruited Nick Nugent.
Yep.
And at first when I asked him, you know, he had this look on his face like, oh no.
And it's
but then at the same time, oh yes.
And now Nick is teaching classes.
Yes.
And
yes.
Giving presentations on history. I mean,
he's amazing.
Geologically speaking, he's evolving.
Yes. Nick is a very interesting guy, and you know, he loves history just as much as I do.
Yeah.
And he likes, you know, I mean, we all have our niche likes.
Mm-hmm.
And his goes more towards the overall and the military. He just loves military history.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. And I grew up as an Air Force brat, so I know a little bit. I don't know nearly as much as he knows.
We're going to have to change our date in April because I'll be flying out on Wednesday, the last Wednesday. So we'll do it like the last Monday, something like that. So what are you thinking about for April? Besides saying, I hope I don't lose my bet to David.
You know, I think I would like to talk about the very, very early days of Fairbanks, something that hasn't been talked about before. And I'm working on putting together a timeline. And as I put this timeline together of these really early things that happened here.
Yeah, before Barnett came in.
Well, after Barnett came in.
Okay, after Barnett came in, okay.
But before Barnett became the first mayor.
Okay.
Which he wasn't.
I was wondering when you're going to say that.
Yes. He was the first
elected.
Incorporated. Cyrus Medill was elected.
He was the first. He was the first.
Barnett actually did not win the election.
Yeah, I know. But go ahead. Anyway, what you're thinking about doing.
But I wanted to, up to the point of him becoming mayor. So from when he lands on the riverbank up to becoming mayor.
What happened up here?
What happened?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't know very much about that.
Why we became a city. Yeah, why we became Fairbanks.
It was not an accident.
No.
The more I look at that, the more I see this was no accident. So
there's a conspiracy afoot.
There was sort of, yes. So, yeah.
So, if the ice goes out prior to noon on May 8th, then I'm going to cry conspiracy that they were blowing up stuff.
Well, you can cry all you want. You get whatever I bring for lunch.
No, I make lunch then.
Oh.
But I'll still
I won't be crying.
No, you won't.
No.
No, you won't. Oh. Well, Fairbanks, that is our show. This Friday, we're going to have Mayor Bronson in for the first two-thirds of the show. And I'm trying to get Fridays now with a gubernatorial candidate. We have 18 of them.
Oh, wow.
But this is what happens. After, you know, like June 1, when it's a sign-up time, I'm not having, you know, if you give it to one, you got to give it to 18 people, and I'm not doing that.
Well, they start falling off after that, too.
No, they haven't yet.
No, but they do. As it gets closer to election, it usually will. After
the primary.
Yeah.
Fairbanks, you have a great day. I will see you on Friday.